Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
You know what powers every dream, Lisa, Steve?
Tell us.
You just need to know?
Solar.
More and more every day, Steve, but you're wrong. I'll tell you what powers every dream. Payroll. Yeah, from your first paycheck to lifelong security, none of it happens without someone making sure you actually get paid. Wild, right? Behind every payday, there's a professional who makes it happen. A real person. Not some magical ATM fairy flinging 20s around. This September 15th to 19th, it's National Payroll Week. And the National Payroll Institute wants your stories. That's you, not you, Lisa and Steve. It's people who are listening.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Your stories are too scary to tell?
Yeah. Most of hers involve cabins in woods. You want to...
I don't want right? to know. Yeah. I don't want to know. Tarps. About it exactly. But listening, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I got a story, maybe it's your first summer job in maternity leave or that glorious moment you got paid on time and didn't have to survive on instant noodles. Post your story with hashtag power of payroll and hashtag contest. Tag the National Payroll Institute and you could win a $250 prepaid credit card. Plus, for every post with those hashtags, NPI, again, not the Porpoise Institute, National Payroll Institute.
It can be both.
It can't be both, Steve. We've talked about this. It can't be both. NPI, National Payroll Institute, donates $1 to Food Banks Canada, up to $25,000, which is a lot of money. Payroll power is more than just paychecks. It keeps the lights on, literally, including the ones over my head right now.
And they're nice lights.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Well, see, that's dialed down to payroll. Hey, listen, thanks for watching and or listening. What's it called? Hey, listening? Hey, thanks for watching and or listening to Podcast is Broken, a weekly podcast in which we try to make Canadian news and politics a bit more funner. My name is Brittlestar.
My name is Steve Boots, and I think we make it the funnest.
Mm. My name is Lisa, and I think this week we're going to make it boot-tastic.
Aw, that's so sweet. Why did you say that, Lisa?
I don't know.
Well, for those of you listening and watching, it is going to be Steve's last episode with Podcast is Broken. That's right. We finally pulled the trigger and fired him.
We all knew this day was coming.
I'm calling it Liberation Day, and it'll be great. It is Steve's last day. Steve, what are you going to be doing?
So if you've been following along on Twitter and that's sort of, or Blue Sky, not Twitter. Twitter's dead to me. But if you've been following along on Blue Sky, I've been trying to keep folks updated. I miss teaching a lot.
Aww.
Like a lot. I expected to miss it. I didn't expect to miss it this much.
Yeah.
And the reality is that when you're doing social media, that can sometimes make teaching a little more challenging because, you know, if you don't want to step on toes, you don't want to create issues with like families or any of that stuff. And so part of the return to teaching is going to be stepping away from social media. Truth is, I love social media. It's been lovely, but I just miss the classroom so much.
That's a sentence no one's ever said before. I love social media. It's been lovely. Right? No one's ever said that.
Yeah. So this isn't something that I'm being like dragged into kicking and screaming or anything like that. Far from it. This is sort of my choice to find a path forward to go back to the profession that I love so very much and to hopefully land on my feet there. So, yeah. to the folks at home, thank you so much for being a part of this. And you know, I'll still be you know, keeping an eye on politics and all that stuff, but I'm going to be keeping my thoughts to myself, which is going to be a very strange experience.
Oh, I predict your head will pop off.
I was going to say he's going to combust.
I do want to say, though, my lovely co-hosts have been incredibly gracious with this journey, because it's happened fairly quickly. I don't know. It's a lot, right? Like, we've built something awesome here, and I know that they're going to find a way to forge ahead without me. But yeah, basically just a lot of appreciation. And, you know, it's bittersweet, of course. Like, it's sad to step away from things that I enjoy, but it's nice to step back to things that I know are really fulfilling and really meaningful. And, like, I don't know. I just keep, there's certain experiences along the way that keep popping back into my head that I just can't let go of. Like, times that I feel like I actually really genuinely helped a kid or made their life a better place. And those, believe it or not, you don't have that same experience talking into a camera.
To a couple of idiots.
Right? And reading their comments. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be stepping back from kind of all of it and hoping that I find my way back into the classroom.
Well, we're going to miss you. As you said, we've the three of us, I think, have built up an amazing chemistry and a weird sort of fun relationship with each other and talking about various topics. You've made me somehow seem extremely right wing. That's fine. But you know, I think we're going to miss you, obviously. And, you know, I'm grateful for the time you've invested in Podcast is Broken and, turned it into something really fun. We've had some amazing times and we don't have the budget for a flashback montage. So if you're listening at home, or if you just sort of close your eyes and imagine, we'll just have a couple seconds silence.
In the arms of the angel, fly away.
Do you remember when he
I got pretty close to that note, I gotta say.
I was really impressed. Good. Yeah. It was very good. No, I'm very happy for you that you're gonna be doing what you love the most. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
You've given a lot.
I think that's really what it comes down to, the social media's been great, but there's just a big hole in my heart shaped like teaching that I gotta go back to. Like, it just, you know when your gut is just telling you something with a lot of clarity and you're like,
yeah,
well, this gut feeling is very inconvenient, but I'm going to have to go ahead and follow.
Yeah, I mean,
this.
That's so fortunate, though, because a lot of people don't have the good fortune to have that kind of gut feeling telling you what you do. You sort of think, I don't know. But if you've got that feeling in your gut that says, I have to do this, it's a bit of a calling, then that's good. That's great.
Yeah, I probably should have had this experience before I stepped away from my job, but you know, we live and we learn.
But sometimes being away makes you appreciate what you had, right?
Exactly.
I keep saying, I swear Joni Mitchell said something about this.
Yeah, something.
Damn you, Joni Mitchell.
And then the Counting Crows ruined it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, forget the rest of the people. You better be sending me pictures of Papadou. I went Princess Peach all the time.
Yeah.
Well, the cat just decided to
and
make
the cat
a guest
came back. Oh. Yeah.
The cat is a total attention whore.
Right?
It's one
totally.
That's going to be missing it the most, probably.
Me.
Yeah. Well, we will soldier on. I'm proud of what we've done, and we'll continue on. For those listening, we appreciate your support, and we'll see where this takes us, everyone. And we're looking, I think the kids that are going to have you as a teacher are going to be lucky.
Yeah.
You're going to be that weirdo teacher that just knows a bit too much and cares a bit too much.
That's, I think, kind of you to say.
It is. We all have that teacher.
Yeah, exactly. Damn it, that guy was right into it, wasn't he? No, I think you're going to inspire a lot of kids, and that's great. That's wonderful. So thank you for your time and support and effort and investment and all that kind of stuff. It's been
thanks to the both
lovely.
Of you, too.
Yeah.
And the cat says thank you as well.
The cat says thank you. That's nice.
That was really well timed.
Right? Way to go. Extra friskies for you.
We have business to conduct here.
Oh,
we have to get to our headlines for Make It Make Sense. Should we just start with the first headline? Are you guys ready to jump in? I'll explain the game again. I give it a headline, and the headline is comprised of three different news stories. It's up to Lisa and Steve to tell me which news stories those are. And then we talk about each one of those news stories. So I give a headline. It's wacky. It's hard to make out, but it's comprised of three news stories. Does that make sense? And then I give points. Points are... I got a point sheet, don't I?
The scorecard.
I'm just going to get my scorecard over here. It's all digital now.
So what you're saying is that this isn't pointless.
This is not pointless. I was going to deduct 1 point from Steve for that, but I'm going to let him, just because it's his last episode, I'm going to let him keep it.
Well, I'm not going to let you win. So just letting you know that.
Chances are he won't. Yeah. That's, I mean, as much as I know he likes to compete, he hasn't really shown the drive to win yet.
That's why he's leaving the show.
that's why. That's the heart of it.
It's not teaching. Was whatever.
Scores are rigged.
If I lose one more of these stupid games.
Lisa keeps winning, I'm out.
Okay. Are you guys ready? Owen, do we have the headlines for graphics or something like that or not? We do. I'm so glad we just taught Owen to speak in game show noises. When he was a child, it really paid off. It took a long time, but it's really paid off. Let's have headline number one, please.
Make it make sense.
Headline number one, ashamed Canadians clock in and bored back to work.
Okay, I know the ashamed Canadians one.
Okay, go on. What is it?
That is the Angus Reid poll that was talking about people being ashamed to have, I think it was Poilievre as their leader, right? That was one of the survey questions?
That's correct. Ooh, you are correct. Ding, you get the ding. Point for that. Well done. Yeah, a new Angus Reid survey says half the country would feel ashamed, quote, if Pierre Poilievre became prime minister. The data dropped as he re-entered parliament via an Alberta by-election. It's a vibes check, says CTV, that doubles as a reminder polls and seats aren't the same metric.
They're so woke, vibe check.
According to CTV News, 50% of respondents said they would be, quote, ashamed to call Poilievre PM. The article notes that Poilievre has won his seat back in the House of Commons, of course. And it's a whole optics thing, because, of course, he won his seat back in Parliament, but he has his leadership review coming up in January.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. They were on and on and on about how if he didn't get more than 82% of the vote, his leadership was in question, and he got 80% of the
vote. Close enough. That's what they're saying now. It's close enough.
Yeah. That Angus Reid poll was interesting, though, because it really showed really rock-solid support among the conservative base and not really among anybody else. Like, one of the things that they looked at a lot was, like, accessible voters, so, like, people who considered conservative and didn't. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty strongly in favor of, like, new leadership and making big changes and stuff and pushing the party to the left. And the base was like, nope, things are great. We got this.
Things are totally fine.
We love it.
I don't get it. I mean, I just find it weird that I'm not a big fan of Poilievre. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that or not. I'm not a big fan of Poilievre.
Right?
No, I know. I can hold my cards pretty close to my chest.
As right wing as you are. It hurts his heart so much when we say that.
It does. I think of all the times I was mocked by actual right wingers. But I think to myself, you know, Poilievre lost the election. Robert Fife said most people have a problem with the fact that he's a bit of a dick on CBC News, which I thought that's a big threshold to cross.
Right?
That's a new one for Robert Fife, dropping that sort of salty language.
And to the point. Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. To your point with the Angus Reid poll saying that, you know, the base are still on board, but nobody else is. I don't understand why the base, as it were, the conservative diehards, are not going, I don't think this is a winning strategy, because in four elections they've lost. Is that right? Four elections?
Yeah. But
but every time they come up with a way to say that it went great.
We got
the most votes we ever got and a whole bunch of stuff. And it's like, man.
Yeah.
I don't think they can admit they're wrong. I think they've invested so much in this and that whole, all the slogans and the Trudeau era, I think they've invested so much that, like, they can't admit that he is not the future.
Yeah.
Right? So the real question, though, is there a viable alternative waiting in the wings for them? Because, like, part of the what has to factor in the leadership review is, like, is there somebody who's next? And, like, who's floating around? Jason Kenney? Like, I guess Tim Houston from Nova Scotia, but I don't know if he's...
Well, they don't like him now because of the woods.
Well, I also... Well, this...
We're stopping from the woods.
But, like, also, does he have the national profile to be able to challenge Poilievre? I have my doubts, right? Like, it is... It's hard to imagine anybody building more support among the people who would vote in a leadership review than Poilievre right now.
But it's also... The party has to decide what direction they want to go in. So if they want to dig their heels in with this leader in the alt-right side, way to the right, then of course they're going to keep Pierre. If they just care about winning an election and getting into power, they're going to have to scooch a wee bit over to the left. Yeah. And then that may be, because I don't know of any current MPs that would scooch. That's the
problem. You don't know of anybody scooch ready?
Like, scooch ready.
I don't think Lanceman's very scoochy.
No.
Lesson Lewis isn't going to scooch.
It's always hard to tell, though. Like, it's always hard to tell how much somebody is towing the party line versus sincere beliefs, right? Like, my takeaway from a lot of MPs, not just conservatives, any party, is that they're all just political windsocks. They just go whichever way they think things are blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
Weirdly, except the fact that what's counter to that is the fact that they keep losing elections and they won't change wind. Like, the wind has changed.
It just blow harder. Yeah. It just doesn't get them anywhere.
It's like they're holding up their own windsock, holding it up in the air and flapping it around. No, it's fine. It's totally good. Oh, I don't get it. And I think also what's interesting to me was listening to Poilievre's tirade yesterday, I guess it was, talking about all the same old talking points, essentially, and ignoring the fact and being really not Team Canada. And I felt like this is the reason you lost the last election, is because people were like, anyone who says Team Canada in the face of what's happening in the US, we're on board.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he hasn't switched into that gear yet.
Yeah, it's interesting because that Angus Reid poll did also show, like, even conservative supporters want him to sort of align with Carney when it comes to making a trade deal with Trump. Like, sure, it's the Team Canada thing is pretty strong right now. And so, like, taking that forever oppositional stance, it doesn't really seem to be serving him very well right now.
I don't think so. Is he going to change? Do we feel he's going to change?
No.
I kind of don't want him to change either, because I think to myself, you haven't shown the ability to read the room. And that's distressing. Whereas I think that other candidates, like, you think even Andrew Scheer had a bit better ability to read the room than that.
When? With that one time?
No, that one time. That one time when he offered me a drink in a bar, and that's all I remember.
Oh.
I'm talking about the video he did.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Let's move on with the headline. So you guys, let me review the points first of all. Steve has 1 and Lisa has 0. So Steve is in the lead right now.
Hey,
very excited. Headline number 1 again, ashamed Canadians clock in and board back to work. You've got to shame Canadians.
Back to work. The Air Canada flight attendants.
Well done.
Thank you.
Lisa gets a point. Exactly. Yes, according to Reuters, the government required binding arbitration because Air Canada, of course, flight the cabin crew went on strike. The action came on Saturday, August 16th. The unionized flight attendants opposed the intervention. I detailed some of the I'm just really trying to figure out. I've lost my detailed summary.
You lose interest when it's union stuff, eh?
Exactly. Whatever. Blah blah blah. We get it. Strike, strike, strike.
It is interesting, though. Is this the thing that ends the Carney honeymoon? Like, he is. Well, he's been getting a lot of grace from the public on a lot of stuff, and this is the first one that seems like it's really blown back on him.
So to do a better summary of what's happening for people who don't know, for some reason, the Air Canada flight attendants went on strike. Big point of contention was the fact that they weren't paid while they were on the ground. They're only paid hourly while they were in the air, which is insanity. Because all the import stuff, I think, like closing the door, that happens on the ground. I want them to be paid for that. I don't want them to be like voluntarily closing the door. You know what? I'll just close the door.
Your last one on the plane. Can you get the door?
I'm not getting paid yet. I haven't clocked in. So they went on strike for lots of good reasons, I felt. And that was one of the very big good reasons they went on strike. I did find it really weird that the government was so trigger happy about this, like immediately pulled the trigger and said, that's it. We're doing this binding arbitration.
And then immediately act surprised about a bunch of stuff. They're like, oh, wait, there was unpaid hours? Like,
yeah.
Guys, you really should have checked into this before mandating them back to work, shouldn't you?
I kind of knew about the unpaid hours. Yeah. It's sort of like, no, I didn't know concretely. This was the first time concretely someone had said, we don't get paid. And I was like, oh, my God, I'd heard that might be a rumor. And how ridiculous would that be? But this is the first time I'd actually sort of had someone, you know, confirm it. And it's horrendous. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And what's even better, I guess, about the fact that they've accepted the deal now, or tentative deal, is that it's going to be industry changing, because it's not just Air Canada. It's numerous airline companies that don't pay their flight attendants and flight and cabin crew before they're in the air, which is insanity.
Yeah, apparently it's more or less industry standard. And like, it's one of those things where, like, if it's, my understanding is it's a holdover from rail, that it's a holdover from, like, when people, if you worked on rail, you were only paid when the train was moving or something. And like, you see how these old rules kind of hang around, but like at a certain point, it's time to question them, right? Like,
yeah.
So I believe in the tentative deal, they get like partial wage for a set amount of time or something.
That's what it sounded like. Yes. Yeah. Which apparently has been offered before. They were going to offer 30 or 50% of their hourly wage while they're on the ground. Again, I feel when they're on the ground is the hard part of the job. Apart from like any major incident happening in the air, that's the hard part of the job.
Why can't they just, like, there's a standardized amount of time, like when they need to be on the flight, right? So if the flight starts, you know, at 5 o'clock and we start letting people on at 5 o'clock, they generally would have to be like, or should be, I'm going to say 15 to half an hour before that. So they get everything set up, make sure they have everything they need, blah, blah, blah. So why don't they have just a standardized time that it's half an hour before takeoff that is the requirement for cabin crew to be on the plane and start paying them at that point? Like, traveling to work, I get it, but like doing things as part of your job.
Yeah.
Why aren't they paid?
Anyway. Well, it's like if you guys have had, I don't know if you had retail jobs before, but at the jobs where they'll be like, listen, we need you to arrive half an hour before your shift starts to get ready to set up, to count cash or whatever. And you're like, I'm thinking at the time when I was, I could be a bit teenager, I guess, at the time, thinking this is ridiculous. No. I'm going to show up exactly like 30 seconds before you start paying me, and then I'll do whatever I have to do, whatever you need me to do.
Right.
But it's so ridiculous. I mean, it's also illegal, is it not? A part of the labor law?
Don't make that face at me. Just answer the question.
Yeah, that's more in depth. No. But
What do you mean it's more in depth? Meaning like it's
noted legal experts, Steve and Lisa.
And it,
but do you mean like if you're salaried, you're not going to necessarily get paid? But if you're paid by the hour, do you not have to be paid by the hour in order to do work? Or is there leniency?
There's leniency.
Yeah.
Right?
There's, and like, sector specific stuff. There's all manner of things.
Yeah. And there's like, you know, if you're bound by a collective agreement, I mean, that has to, like, hours of work or whatever, breaks or whatever, it has to be enshrined in a collective agreement. But if you're going by like labor code is like the bare minimum, like provincial labor code. Is the bare minimum. Federal labor code, I have no idea what it is, right? So, and they would count as federal, I guess. So it's willy nilly. But I remember, in retail, like, you know, if the store closed at 9, you get paid till 9, but you still have to like cash out and do all the other crap, right? God, why didn't I fight that back then? Anyway.
But yeah. I never worked retail. I worked at Subway, and whatever concerns I had were made up for by the amount of sandwiches I ate. So
you just stole meat at the end of the shift.
It's like, why is Steve being chased by dogs? Don't worry. Yeah. Pockets definitely aren't full of deli meats.
Pockets full of meatballs. Sorry.
It was, Which is funny because it was legend in my family, and this is an example of that terrible way when employers don't pay their employees to do stuff but expect them to do stuff, you end up with this sort of weird vigilante justice happening where Steve's stealing cold cuts. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know. I'm not suggesting he stole cold cuts.
Allegedly.
Always allegedly.
But in my family, it was legend. My dad's mom, my grandmother, worked in a cake factory, one of the first cake factories in meaning small French fancies and stuff like that, you know, like little cupcakey type things. Mm-hmm. And she would stuff cakes down her tights. And she would come home with them, and remember my dad saying, she'd come home and be like, listen, they don't pay me enough at the cake factory. Do you want some cakes? And then she'd reach into her tights, and both my dad and his brother were like, no, no. My dad still could never eat a cake his whole life.
They didn't have like bags or anything back then, or?
No, no, just tights.
Just tights. Just tights. Take your stuff home by tights. Oh, Steve digged out early. He's like, screw this.
Well, thanks a lot. That was Steve's exit. Wow, you really just left abruptly.
I posted in the chat, the cat unplugged my microphone, so I needed to reach. He's nuzzling the microphone right now because he's just so affectionate.
Yeah. Is this whole decision the cat's decision?
It's the cat. They put the two decisions on the floor and the cat picked it.
Calling it. Oh, man. Yeah. It's like when people make their kids pick which their starter Pokemon is. They lay out the Charizard and stuff in front of them and they're like, oh, what's it going to be? It's the same sort of thing. The cat got to choose and he chose to unplug the mic.
I have no idea.
I'm
going to
miss your nerd speak. I really am. Where I just go, uh-huh.
That's the one thing I'm not going to miss.
No, you see, the good news is now I'll have just like an endless stream of, you know, not just two people, but dozens to give me that look of like, why are you saying this?
Why are you talking?
All right, let's jump back in. Ashamed Canadians clock in and board back to work is the headline. The headline again is Ashamed Canadians clock in and board back to work. You've got ashamed Canadians. You got back to work.
Thanks. What would we
clock
do with that?
Clock in and bored.
That's not all for you, Lisa. It's for the benefit of those listening at home. Maybe they're vacuuming. Maybe they're doing something else.
So you wouldn't do two things about the same Air Canada thing, I don't think.
Correct.
I think we're going to need a hint on this.
We're going to need a hint. Okay.
This is good. I like this multiple choice. Multiple choice. What is this story about? So the part of the headline is clock in. Okay. What is this story about? A, Ottawa is closing City Hall cafeterias. B, Ontario is mandating 12-hour shifts. C, Ford urging full in-office weeks. Ottawa says most staff already are.
C.
Correct. Steve gets the point for that. Mm.
I said it first. You can't look horrified.
He did say it first. Exactly. According to CTV News, Ottawa, over 85% of City of Ottawa employees are in the workplace every day now. Doug Ford wants municipal employees in the office 5 days a week. The province's push meets a capital already mostly back on site, highlighting mismatched perceptions about hybrid work inside public administration. Doug Ford urged municipalities to bring workers fully back to the office as well. So I'm not really of two minds in this. I'm of like 70-30 mind on this. Do you want to hear the 70 or the 30?
Oh, we can guess, but go ahead.
70 or the 30?
Let's go with 30.
Let's do the 30. 30, yeah.
Okay, the 30. The 30 is the reason to go back to the office is that it does provide business for those surrounding businesses, and it does provide more money into the economy, meaning like the coffee shops and restaurants and all kinds of stuff. You just have to go down to Bay Street or something, and you notice there's a huge difference between prior to hybrid work really kicking in and not kicking in. There's like lots of places that would exist purely Monday through Friday just don't exist anymore. I see that as one of the reasons to go back, because it does, ecosystem's the wrong word, but like a business network that that relies on workers, office workers. The 70% that's against it, I think, is that everyone's going to be paid less money. Everyone's making less money now. Your time is like, I think you're risking job satisfaction. People aren't going to be making as much money. They're not going to spend as much money, all that kind of stuff.
And there's also the issue here of, like, why is it the responsibility of workers to go spend money in downtown Ottawa or wherever it may be? Like, why are we putting this on them? Like, if we want downtown to thrive, make downtown a place people want to go rather than saying, like, no, you've got to go into the office. Like, sure, your life was immensely better at home, but have you considered that the, you know, burger stand down the street really does need some people on the, on, you know, it needs some foot traffic. So we're going to uproot your life.
The Tim Hortons is at risk of shutting down. I remember when, like, there was the talks in Alberta and Edmonton specifically about, like, going back to work and stuff like that. And the Edmonton Downtown Business Association had a big, like, no, we need to get people back into the buildings and stuff like that. There's no guarantee people are going to, like, go down and get coffee, right?
Sure.
And now, especially if they're having to pay for parking, or now they have to pay for more gas to get to work, or transit, or whatever it is, they're gonna keep that money. They're not going to spend it as much as I think people think they will to revitalize a downtown or business core. And unless, I mean, I'm of the opinion, unless people aren't doing their jobs or not completing their tasks and there's a performance issue and there's an ability to work hybrid or what have you, let them. Because if they're happy, then that's less sick time. That, you know what I mean? It's more productive. Sure. I think there's a lot of benefits. I think the idea or the notion that work can only be done when someone is watching you is antiquated at this point. We proved that during COVID.
What do we think about the argument that, and I think Doug Ford's made this argument as well, that, you know, sometimes you have to look someone in the eyes, like you have to be in person in the same room to come up to work through certain things, which I guess is part of the hybrid thing, right?
So with me going back to work, I got to say my opinion on this has evolved. I genuinely did used to think, like, yeah, online's fine. It'll get it done. And, like, to be very clear, online made work a lot more accessible for a lot of people, right? It made,
yeah, absolutely.
It made work a lot easier to attend. It also made work just a lot easier, you know, for people with disabilities or for people who are immunocompromised. There's all sorts of people who were substantially helped by this. But in my experience, like, what I have found, like, even just in sort of the return process, there's meetings, there's conversations, and they've been in person. And even that, it's just like, this is better. This is nice, right? Like, there's subtext. You're able to sort of see how the person reacts to you. You're able to sort of, There's just a shared sense of community when you're in the same room as other people. And I think that does have real value. Like, hey, man, you sit alone in your basement for a year and a half and you let me know when you're like, you know what? Alone is better.
Having full on conversations with the cat. No, I get it. I get what you're saying. I get it.
Well, yeah, the cat, I think, can that, be very opinionated.
That's true. Well, exactly.
But I think there should be option. I don't think it should be a mandated process, because I think just like children in school, each adult works differently, right? And so whatever's going to be beneficial for them, it doesn't mean that they never go into an office or they never attend a meeting in person. But I think when you're mandating it after we've seen that it is possible to do, again, unless there's a performance issue, I think you're just flexing your bossness to say, because I said so, right? That's what I believe. And I'm gonna stick to it. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you in the sense that I think it can't be mandated. It can't be an ultimatum. It can't be a maxim of, like, everyone has to be in the office, because it doesn't necessarily have any benefits, and it doesn't even have any benefits to the bottom line. Mm-hmm. If people are doing their jobs, like, as long as there's no performance issues and people are doing their jobs, then the company is making money. Mm-hmm. It's doing as much money as it can make, which is great. They're not going to make any more money if people are in the same room. Then they, provided they're outputting what they need to output. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where they are. But yeah, I also agree with Steve though. I think that, you know, in his very, very right wing, perspective,
that's me.
No, but I do. So. It's like with Zoom teaching or something like that. It's like, it was a really, during the pandemic, Zoom teaching was, we were fortunate to have that technology to do that, to maintain something for kids, but it doesn't remotely compare it to having kids in the classroom. Mm-hmm. In the same way that I feel like an office maybe works There's something, there's an intangible benefit to being together. Yes, I don't know if you have to be together all the time. I'm a big opponent to the idea of selling your time, meaning I have to be here from this hour to this hour. I'm much more task, I think, is a better way to do it. Like, what do I need to do in this time period?
Oh, you can never have a boss then.
No. Yeah. I think I've demonstrated that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's interesting to think about. There's definite benefits to having people back in the office in lots of different ways. But I think also it's going to mean that everyone's going to get made less money. They're going to make less money because they're going to be spending money to getting there.
Yeah. And this is it. It takes money out of people's pockets. And that's always by far the biggest downside.
It takes time out of people's pockets, which is almost worse, right? I'm a proponent of like a Montessori type of work environment where we may be doing the same thing, but slightly differently, as long as we're getting to the same goal, right? Like, as long as we're all
society to be a bunch of weird kids. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's called diversity, my friend.
That's not diversity. Montessori is not diversity.
Oh my god!
I'm just telling you right now. Just because it's Italian.
This
is also Lisa's last
recording.
Episode as well.
Yeah, not by choice.
All right, well done. We'll look at the points again. Tabulating. Steve has 2. Lisa has 1.
Commanding lead over here.
Commanding lead, exactly.
Okay, there's 10.
100% more. Let's do headline number 2, please. Headline number 2.
Make it make sense.
Wow, the graphics are quite something. If you are not watching this video,
you should be
because the graphics are artistic. The headline is Ford blasts pending project while Ottawa schmoozes. Again, Ford blasts pending project while Ottawa schmoozes.
Ottawa schmoozing. Hold on. Is that the expenses that were paid for various people and wine and stuff like that on the part of the federal government? No,
it is not. I'm sad to say.
Want one. Minus one.
No, you don't lose a point. You just don't get one.
Ford's been mad about a ton of stuff
right?
lately.
Yeah.
It doesn't narrow it down.
No, it doesn't. Do you want a multiple choice for that first part?
Yeah, I think sure. I do.
This is for the Ford blast portion of the headline. The premier, A, blasted Stelco's CEO over support for U.S. tariffs. B, is cutting all Ontario steel exports. Or C, proposed buying Stelco and turning it into a museum.
A.
A is correct. Lisa gets the point.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know that one.
It's that's the one that seemed to make the most sense to me. Because he doesn't care about art. There's no way he's opening up a museum.
Oh, yeah, he's not opening a museum. That's we call that the reverse Doug Ford.
That's right.
Exactly. Unless you put a casino in it. Ontario Premier Doug Ford criticized the U.S. owners of Stelco for backing Trump's tariff regime. He said he, quote, blast the company's CEO.
Blast him.
There's so many tariff things happening right now. It's crazy. Which is interesting about the tariffs in the U.S., of course, is that that's starting to trickle down into food prices and to cost of living in general, which is fascinating. And even right down to our little merch site, peacelovecanada.ca, which we were confirmed today that as of any orders sent out as of next Friday, a week from today, will be subject to customs and duty because they're no longer protected under the Free Trade Act, thanks to Trump. That's going to end up costing a minimum brokerage fee of about, I don't know, $55,
$65. Oh, right, because it's the de minimis exemption, right?
Yeah. So it means that everyone who's buying stuff from us, we get a lot of American orders. People buy honorary Canadian stuff. They buy Peace of Canada stuff. But if they buy like a sticker, a couple stickers for $6, there's going to be a $55 because we can't send it as letter mail legally. It'll come with a customs fee of about $55-$65 on top of whatever.
Like it's a flat fee?
Well, the brokerage is for UPS and stuff like that.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Unreal.
Yeah, crazy.
Sorry, American friends.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they've got until... it's too late. If you're listening to this podcast, it's too late. If you're American...
You missed the deadline.
You missed the cutoff.
Ship sailed.
Exactly. If somehow you're intuiting this...
If you're going to pay $55, you might as well buy a lot of stuff, right?
You should buy a ton of stuff.
Like all of it.
to make it worthwhile. Plus, it's Canadian money, Canadian prices.
I'm helping you. Deal. I'm helping you, bud.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So the headline again, Ford Blast pending project while Ottawa schmoozes. You got the Ford Blast thing. Well, you didn't really get it. You kind of got it. Lisa got it. But we're still looking for Ottawa schmoozes and pending project, I believe.
Tell us about the auto. No. What would you like, Steve? I'll defer.
I want, let's get some multiple choices for Ottawa schmoozing.
Okay.
It's such a fun word.
I like schmooze.
What brought a prominent Canadian politician to D.C.? A, opening a pop-up poutine embassy. B, negotiating maple syrup copyrights. Or C, first official meeting with Rubio, Marco Rubio, amid tariff tensions.
C. Well done. Anita Anand, yes. Went down there.
Anand.
Is it Anand?
Anand, yes. I keep being told Anand. That over and over again by Shannon. It's Anand. Anita's fantastic, by the way. She's one of my favorite politicians, to be honest.
Did I tell you about the time that I met her?
No.
She was introduced to me by like my handler at an event who was a TikTok rep. And he was like, oh, yeah, Steve posts on TikTok lots. And she goes, oh, that's great. Really cool. And kind of like vaguely acted like she knew what he was talking about. And it's like, look, man, we both know that it's not allowed on your phone. And that even if it was, you wouldn't watch this.
I love how people think that like the federal politicians only have one phone. Right? I'm sure they have their own phone.
Anita Anand, Canada's foreign minister, met with the U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, as tariffs escalated. It was their first official meeting in the new roles. Ottawa wants a de-escalation. Washington wants leverage, according to Global News. This is whenever I hear they have to go meet people like Marco Rubio, I think, you know what? You're earning your money.
That's not worth it. Yeah, it's not worth it. Couldn't do it.
It'd be so hard to be like, you are dorks.
Let's work together.
I know. Can you imagine all the smiling and handshaking you have to do? I think that's one of the frustrating things about online and social media is you have people who comment on political stuff like that saying, how can she not just tell him to his face what the deal is? It's like, well, then we'd all be screwed.
Right? Like, we can't. That's why there's people like me.
Exactly. That's the politics Steve. Part of politics. Yeah. Is that we have to handshake and be nice and schmoozy and all that kind of stuff. 2 points for Lisa. 3 points for Steve.
Woo!
That's pretty good. We have one part of the headline left. And the headline was Ford Blast Pending Project While Ottawa Schmoozes. So pending project is the final news story.
Okay, we're going to need a hint.
Is it pipeline purgatory? Is it all the pipelines that are just waiting for the official high five?
I think that's kind of, it's sort of generally correct. Yes, I'm going to say generally correct.
Hey! See, he's feeling generous.
I am, exactly. Oh. If this was your first episode, you'd be down negative 12. Ottawa says big project approvals are coming. For infrastructure, just not yet. Energy and Natural Resources Minister Tim Hodgson is, quote, hopeful the fall, or the autumn for you fancy people, will bring the first tranche. Canada's infrastructure calendar is currently in pumpkin spice mode. Wow, they are colorful.
Pumpkin I like it. Spice
They're
mode.
A joy, aren't they? That's lovely. All, of course, tied to the government's major projects bill.
My understanding is that you can actually just get pumpkin spice any time of the year.
No.
What?
September 1st. No, I don't know.
You see, there's this place you can go to called The Store where you can exchange money for pumpkin spice.
No, I don't think so. Do either of you like pumpkin spice stuff?
I hate it.
I hate it as well.
Every fall, I have one pumpkin spice drink.
That's enough.
Because I'm like, this is very autumnal. And then you have like one sip of it and you're like, oh yeah,
it's garbage.
This is why I don't get this.
And I don't understand. I like cinnamon. I like nutmeg. I like whatever. You call it pumpkin spice and it tastes like perfume. I don't like it. I don't want it.
It does have a bit of a perfume taste to it. You're right. No. I did a video one time where I filmed in Starbucks and there was there's no Starbucks back in Stratford now, but there was a Starbucks connected to Target. And I took in a pumpkin, emptied a pumpkin. I had them pour coffee in it. And I said, thank you. And I did a video of me drinking it. And I spat it back all out into the pumpkin. It's not for me. I think it's like the shamrock. It's like shamrock shakes.
I've never had a shamrock shake.
You've never had a shamrock shake?
I will not have you speak ill of the shamrock shake.
I'm questioning everything I know about you.
I love mint, but I don't know. It just always... The ice cream machine's never working anyway, so like I didn't know I have a chance to get it, but
yeah. This is a problem.
I will. Put it in my calendar for March.
Next March, exactly. You go, you're like, oh, Shamrock Shakes. You have one, you're like, that's enough.
That's enough for me, thank you.
Good until next year. All right, let's move on to headline number three, please. Headline number three.
Make it make sense.
Oh, wow, what is going on? I like that. Look at that. The headline is Carney mails Poilievre to Montreal. Oh, I love this headline. Carney mails Poilievre to Montreal.
Okay, so the Poilievre thing's got to be him winning in Battle River Crowfoot.
You are correct. That is absolutely correct, as we talked about at the top of the show. After losing in Carlton in April, Poilievre won Battle River Crowfoot. The riding was vacated for him by former MP Damien Couric in preparation for the leadership.
I will say one of the funniest things about watching the outcome of that, like nobody should be that surprised, right? Like,
right? No,
but
no.
What's been very funny is like, it's actually a pretty decent outcome for him, right? Like most folks were expecting him to be somewhere in the 60s and 70s as outcomes as, in the range of outcomes. It was pretty much as good as it could have gone for him. And there are a lot of people trying really hard to cope with that. There are a lot of people who are like, well, he got fewer votes than they got in the last election. It's like, it's a by-election, guys. Everybody take a breath.
Yeah.
This he got the W here.
I hadn't realized how big the area was.
It's huge.
It's geographically, massive. It's enormous.
Yeah. Takes in about 56,000 people, I think. Is it correct?
So there's like 85,000 eligible voters and like 50 some odd voted. It's like... Have you spent much time outside of the cities in Western Canada, Stuart?
No, for my own safety.
That's fair. It is so much more sparsely populated than I think people realize.
Yeah.
Like, once you get outside the urban centers, like, in order to have a riding that meets the population requirement, it's physically humongous.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I don't know. It's not that surprising that the person with just mountains of brand recognition and the party establishment behind him was able to get a pretty clean win. It's kind of what we all saw coming. And I don't know. I think the people who were frustrated by Couric stepping down were kind of offset by the people who were like, ooh, the party leader's here, you know?
I think there's that like celebrity that I think a lot of people, I saw someone on the news and oh my God, it was just embarrassing. But I think there's that, right? It's like, oh, okay, well, we have someone from Ottawa, even though we hate Ottawa, but we have somebody that's from Ottawa, right?
Yeah. I saw him on the news.
Yeah. Right? Got a picture with him.
I think also the longest ballot thing worked in his favor.
It sounds like, you know, first of all, the in total longest ballot candidates got like 300 and some odd votes. Like they didn't wind up having a huge impact.
No.
But I wonder how many people showed up because they were like, you know, I don't want that sort of nonsense.
But didn't they have to write down their choice as opposed to the regular ballot sheet?
Yeah, Elections Canada changed it because of that.
Yeah.
So they gave you a sheet.
To me, you're not going to look through the names. You're just going to be like, what's the guy's name again? I would love to see the various spellings of Poilievre.
So I'm really curious. We won't get it until there's validated election results, which is probably another week or so. But like, I'm really curious how many ballots got rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is such a unique situation. And I don't mean that like conspiratorially. It's just, like no amount of putting anybody's finger on the scale, I think, could have changed the outcome of this.
No.
It's more just like I'm really curious how the write-in ballot worked and how much it sort of created challenges for the folks counting the ballots, right?
Well, I think they were taking any variation, right? So if it looked like... Here.
So all I can think of is the time the Rhinoceros Party ran a guy named Max Bernier against Max Bernier.
Right? See, that would have been smart.
It's like, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah.
Right? Max Bernier won. But there were no other PP candidates, right? So nobody with a first and last name. So, I mean, I'm assuming if someone put PP on it.
That would count.
That would count because it's the only person. I don't know.
So one thing that is, I'm just trying to verify their name here. What was the name of the band that did campaign songs for a ton of the candidates? Did you hear about these folks?
No.
Do you hear about these folks? You hear about
no.
These?
No.
Hang on 1 second. I'm going to see if I can find their name.
What are we going to do without Steve?
A lot of dead air. Everything.
No, yeah. there was a band who did like, they were named like the Mighty Sandhogs or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but they did campaign songs for like a bunch of different candidates.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, some of them were pretty catchy. Now I'm just dying to find
Ernest
is killing me.
Saskatchewan of you. Some of them are pretty catchy.
He's like, and I will find out.
I danced a couple of those.
Oh, yeah.
In the barn.
Hey, man, you haven't lived until you've danced in a barn. Well, I got married in a barn.
Did you really?
Yeah. So there's a place near Regina. It required a little vision. My wife really wanted to get married overlooking a very specific valley that's very important to her. And there's a place called the Red Barn that is exactly what it sounds like. It is a red barn. And we got married there. We like hung string lights and stuff. And it was honestly really, really, really nice. The only downside that we had was when we were getting organized for it, I was a little concerned about the lack of air conditioning. And they're like, well, that'll only be a problem if it's like 35 degrees. And it was like 40. So we had chocolate treats as part of our like at the end of the day thing, and they all just turned to soup.
Here's some hot chocolate for the road.
But yeah, no, got married in a barn. Very right, Saskatchewan. Right.
Very Saskatchewan.
You were talking about the band and the songs, the campaign songs.
Did
and
you find them?
No. You need to start looking.
That was your job.
I'm was working on it.
Then you
I got
brought it up, man,
stories.
And then you started talking about barns.
Exactly. Good.
I don't even know what we were talking about. What were we talking about?
We were talking about how cool I am.
Okay.
No, I don't think that's what it was. It's the last episode. Yes, Steve, we were talking about how cool you are. No, we were talking about the
longest ballot. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, and writing down PP and the names of people and how I think it worked in his favor, because if you're trying to remember someone's name, even like Bonnie Critchley, who ran as an independent, was doing really well and took, I think, 9% of the vote, which is impressive, I think.
For that area, sure, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, people had to remember her name. They'd be like, what's that woman's name?
Yeah.
You know?
The band's name was the Famous Sandhogs. I found it.
Oh, thank goodness. Yep,
Bonnie Critchley, like, I don't know. It's such a mixed result for her because, like, no independent candidate has ever gotten anywhere near that number of votes in River Crowfoot. But more than that, like independent candidates don't get that many votes anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was by any measure, a very successful independent candidate. But absolutely. Like, I think part of what you run into in that writing is we didn't really have any polling.
No.
So like it was all just speculation and guessing.
Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of people, I think, ascribed a lot of expectations to her campaign that, like, it was kind of a best guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, she was very out there. Obviously, she was, you know, doing interviews and she was on the news. And, like, Pierre was just doing his thing, right? He was just hopping on ATVs and driving down city streets without helmets and shit. But I think part of it was that because some of the candidates were so out there, it gave maybe a false sense of their expectation,
their poll,
their poll, right? But I mean, I see the conservatives, you know, the libs are crying about it. Like, if anybody didn't think that he was going to win,
yeah, it would have been delightful and really, really funny.
Oh, yeah, but that was never gonna happen. So,
well, that's the thing is like, there were, I think, a lot of people rooting for it just because, like, it would have been political chaos, right? Oh, like, the most absolutely. Chaotic thing that could possibly happen,
yeah. Totally.
But like anybody who was following it closely, like it was pretty clear which way the wind was blowing the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
It'd be really funny if he doesn't get, if he loses leadership and has to go back to Battle River Crowfoot and just stay there.
odds are low. Although like the real question is, does he run next election in Battle River Crowfoot?
No.
Or does he try to go back to Carlton or somewhere else?
I don't think he'll go back to Carlton, but yeah. I can't see him.
I don't think he's going to stay there. Well, and yeah. We'll see what he does for Battle River Crowfoot in the next
Exactly.
A few years and how he represents his constituents.
Yeah. I'm sure he's very invested.
Yeah.
And knows that area inside out.
He'll be back for the rodeo, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The headline was Carney mails Poilievre to Montreal. We got the Poilievre part. Poilievre returns.
Is Montreal, does that have anything to do with Anna?
No. Poilievre? But no, I'll give you, I'm going to give you a point for that because I read that story as well.
Okay. Wow. That was exciting.
Thanks.
Of course, you're referring, it's not the story I'm referring to or the headline's referring to, but you're right. The story about Anna, what's her name? Is she just Poilievre as well?
Yeah.
And. Not that I'm disappointed in that. That's wonderful. That's great. Good for her.
So happy for her. I'm sure.
No, but she'd been looking for a place to stay in Montreal to do some writing, and that made the Daily Mail news, which was quite interesting, quite funny.
Because she needs quiet.
Yeah.
Like you're in a 19 room mansion. Yeah. I'm sure you can find some quiet. Rooms. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's always such a weird thing because I try to never talk about like politicians' families and stuff, but she's so actively involved in the campaign, it's hard to know where the line sits.
Did you see her little thingy that she put out of like we're back and like it was just a?
But this is what I mean, like when you've got somebody like Mark Carney's wife, she largely stays out of it. Mm-hmm. Like she shows up for events and stuff, but she's not a political figure, really.
Yeah.
Anna Poilievre really has kind of involved herself in all of it. And so I feel really weird talking about politicians' families. And then you see how involved she is. And it's like, I don't know where the line sits on this sort of stuff.
I don't care. I feel like she, I feel like in like 40 years from now, we'll find out that she is like the Nancy Reagan of political wives.
Mm.
And if you don't know the Nancy Reagan history, then you need to search it. She was the driving force. She was the bossy pants of the White House and things. Bless her heart. God rest. But, you know.
Yeah.
They're just going to edit all that out.
I'm going to just keep all my Nancy Reagan thoughts to myself.
Whatever.
Wow. The crowd turned on you there into the whole Nancy Reagan thing.
Well, I'm all you've got left, so suck it.
It was actually the Montreal story was actually, I shouldn't just tell you, I should give you some multiple choices.
Okay, yeah, multiple choices.
It's referencing a story between Valerie Plante and Prime Minister Mark Carney. What did Carney and Plante emphasize? A, turning Mount Royal into a spaceport. B, making Saint-Viateur bagels legal tender.
Legal tender.
Bagels. C, shared priorities on transit and housing.
C.
Steve got it.
You're slow on the draw, Lisa. Yeah, you gotta fix that microphone.
That's okay. Exactly. I'm fine with it.
Oh, are you really? You can't sandbag your way to me on my winning on my last day. You can't just be like, heavens to me.
I'll win next week.
Probably.
It'll just maybe. Be me.
We'll see.
Give me
might
hints.
Be a bunch of negatives. Montreal's mayor and the prime minister compared notes on transit, housing, and AI. It was Carney's first official visit with a Canadian mayor. And also, Quebec is getting a big infrastructure transfer and got one. $557.5 million for Quebec infrastructure this year, including $84 million for Montreal alone.
I just felt all the blood pressure of the Albertans here go, what? Their money, transfer payments. Okay, sorry.
Listen, start charging sales tax, and then we'll talk, okay?
Don't make me do more math. I like the fact that it's just, you know.
I've never known what 13% was of everything so well.
Right.
Yeah. So Carney mails Poilievre to Montreal. We've got Poilievre returns. We've got Carney in Montreal.
Is the mail thing about the new proposed, the new offer, request, demand? I don't know what you want to call it from Cup W.
After a delay tied to mediator availability, bargaining resumes. The union has new wage proposals on the table. Everyone is hoping for fewer delivery exceptions. They're so cheeky, aren't they?
Known for their cheekitude.
Right.
Yeah. According to Canadian Press via CTV, talks are resuming and the union has tabled new wage offers. Recent delays were linked to a lack of federal mediators.
That happens. There's actually far less mediators around than people think.
I feel like
there
I could do it. They could have called me.
I feel like I could do it. Yeah. You just Legislation's a damn, right?
How hard can it be? What do you guys want? Nah, that's stupid. What are you going to give them? Nah, they need more than that.
Well, I just remember when the teachers were going through their deal, like one of the big things that made it hard to get through the process was like at every step where you need like a mediator or an arbitrator or something, like booking them is hard.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
You have to book in advance. Demand. Yeah. That's where the money is.
Apparently. Screw teaching. I'm going to get into the mediating instead.
Is that it?
That's it. That's the review. That's the end of the game. Let's review the points. Lisa, you got 3. Steve, on his last ever episode, got 7.
Sad face.
Libbed up.
Aw.
Oh, God.
There you go. Well, congratulations, Steve, for winning your last ever game of Make It Make Sense. It could be, maybe it's not your last game. We'll find out. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the future holds.
Yeah. It lasts for the foreseeable. How's that?
Lasts for the foreseeable. Exactly. I'm just going to segue here before we wrap up. A reminder, payroll is the thing keeping this whole dreaming big business alive. From your very first paycheck to lifelong security, there's always a payroll pro making it happen. And they deserve some love. National Payroll Week is September 15th to 19th, and the National Payroll Institute wants your stories. Maybe it was a first job, a leave you planned for, or that just that one Friday you weren't living on borrowed coffee and good intentions. Post your story with hashtag Power Payroll and hashtag contest, tag National Payroll Institute, and you could win a $250 prepaid credit card. Plus, every post sends $1 to Food Banks Canada up to a maximum of $25,000. So share your payroll story because getting paid matters. Without it, this podcast would just be called Podcast Is Not Happening, and none of us want that. So thank you so much, everyone, for watching and or listening to Podcast Is Broken. You can, of course, find us on your favorite podcasting platforms and at brittlestar.com. As mentioned, this is Steve's last episode of Podcast Is Broken. We're going to miss you terribly, Steve.
He's going back on the payroll.
He's been back on the payroll.
Get back in that payroll life.
Exactly. So he knows the importance. Maybe he can share a story and get $250. You never know.
There you go.
Technically, you're not part of the show, so you'd still be eligible, I think. You know what I mean? Depends on the dude.
He's going to do that right after.
Exactly.
No, I appreciate you both, and I appreciate the audience and the fans, and just y'all are great.
When's your last post? Anyway.
Pretty quick. Because school's going back pretty soon, yeah. So it's probably in the next couple of days.
All the things that
he couldn't say before. Couldn't bring it to him, bring himself to do it, and now he's going to really just let loose. It'll be great. But thank you everyone for watching and or listening. If you're a paid subscriber, stay around for our amazing improvised theme song. You're going to love it this week if you're a paid subscriber. If not, thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you later.
Take care of yourselves, folks.
Bye, everybody.
You can find past episodes and more at podcastisbroken.ca or your favorite podcast platform.